Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, good to see you.
Good to see you again, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I had a little trip. Glad to be back. Yeah. I'm glad you were maintaining the fort here.
Well, the fans
fort, that sounds a little bit too military, doesn't it?
The fans were disappointed, but yeah. I did my best, sir.
Well, I want to get back and talking about the Middle East and Syria and a few other things. But things have been ratcheted up, not that we haven't aggravated things with Russia and Iran. But, you know, just recently we were threatening to blockade Russia, a simple little matter like that. I've always argued that sanctions are an act of war because you're denying people free trade. But sanctions and blockades are very similar. But it's a little bit more militancy involved when you blockade a country. And it's all over energy, and it's all over money, and it's all over all about the military-industrial complex and who's going to get to sell oil and gas to Europe. The Russians, they're the natural people. Just think, they have the oil and gas, they plan on it, they have one pipeline, they're willing to build another one, and they can offer the best deal to Europe, and yet we're getting in the middle of it. We don't like that, because if you have too much trading, there's no wars. So we have to get rid of this normal trading where the Europeans get the best deal. So we're threatening Russia, we're threatening the Europeans, we threaten the Iranians. You better not trade. Nobody can trade with the Iranians. And then the other thing is sort of ironic. We get in there and involved, and then we cut off all the oil from Iran. So prices maybe tend to creep up a little bit with all this interference. But we're saying, we got to get the prices. You know, our administration, get the prices down. You can't raise your price of your energy. It's a mess. And this is ratcheting up one more step, even though blockades are like sanctions. It's a little bit more threatening to say that you'll use naval vessels, because if you do, one of those vessels might get hit one of these days and it'll get out of control.
Yeah, and we're talking about Ryan Zinke. He's the Interior Secretary for the Trump administration. He's a former U.S. Congressman from Montana and former Navy SEAL. And he was giving a presentation in Pennsylvania not long ago when he was talking about oil and oil supplies and the Russians. And he said, quote, "The United States has the ability with our Navy to make sure the sea lanes are open and, if necessary, to make sure that their energy does not go to market, their energy meaning the Russians." So essentially using our Navy to block Russia from selling its oil to Europe and elsewhere. And, of course, the Russians pointed out the obvious. This is an act of war. You know, if you put a military vessel preventing our commercial ships, from delivering the goods, you are committing an act of war against us.
Now, the administration reassures themselves by saying that we're energy independent. You know, a few years ago, we were terrified that we were so dependent. How would we ever become energy independent? And we are doing better with fracking and the different supply of oil. I'm not sure. We still do import oil and things because you need the natural flow. Sometimes if you're on one side of the continent, you export and maybe import on the other side if you're having, you know, free trade. But they say that this whole thing is dependent on us blockading this because it's going to interfere with our oil industry and our national security, you know. But we're advertising this is because we are so powerful, we control the financial system, so they can't put on sanctions. We can put on sanctions, they can't get around them, which may not always be true. Then also here, blockades, they may be just aggravated enough, and the Europeans, you know, one of these days might just tend to go a different direction, because we've cut off their oil plan, you know, cut off all the oil from Iran. Yeah. And now that they already have one pipeline coming in for China, and we're going to blockade this and tell the Europeans, well, you just have to pay more. We'll give it to you, but we're going to charge more because there's no way they can compete in price. So if they would just allow markets to work, that's why governments tend to get in the way of freedom. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah. I think it also says a lot about the knee-jerk reaction in Washington. You know, if somebody doesn't let us do what we want to do, we pound our fists on the table and we threaten military force. And that's exactly what Zinke was doing. But the head of the Russian Senate's Foreign Relations Committee rightly pointed out, you know, this is nonsense, because the whole point that Zinke was talking about was preventing the Russians from selling their energy to the Middle East. And the Russians said, why would we want to supply energy to the Middle East? They're oozing with oil. You know, this is crazy. I mean, it really is. It's like trying to sell ice cubes in Antarctica. You know, right. It's just a foolish thing.
And there are a few threats being thrown around about Syria, too. You know, the Russians are getting a little bit antsy. They're legitimate legal allies of the Syrian government, and they're telling us it's time for us to leave. Why is it that the American people aren't telling our government, well, it's time for us to leave? Why don't we do it? And why are we there? But the Russians have decided this is coming to an end. They're probably right. And there may be another battle or two, but the Russians and the Syrians have won to a large degree. I mean, there's still some arguments about, outside forces, Turkey and France and the Kurds and Iran and all these things going on, and Israel.
Yeah.
But if we would leave like we're told we might leave, it would help. The odds of that happening, though, even with the Russians' threat, it's time for you to leave, or there's a strong suggestion, the odds of us packing our bag and leaving, because the neocons are pretty much in charge of foreign policy, we're not going to get around that. So I think we have to expect to anticipate the problem that we're not going to leave and these problems are going to exist, which means that the animosity is just going to build. And whether we're putting on sanctions on Russia's shipping to Europe, the Europeans, or the interference in Syria, it just seemed like the whole world has moved closer to depending on militarism and weapons, and who are we going to buy these weapons from, and everybody's buying weapons. So it's really, we're not moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and you know, the president said something in his UN General Assembly speech last week that I thought was pretty good. He said, we need to stop listening to all these experts who are never right about anything.
Right.
And I thought that was a great point. And unfortunately, those are the same people that make up the bulk of his foreign affairs advisors. And you talk about the Syria policy, which is related to what we're talking about with energy. You know, the White House and the DOD right now are at loggerheads, because the White House said, and this is John Bolton, said, no, we got to keep these 2,000 troops at Al-Tanf in Syria, because we got to be ready for Iran, and this is what we're doing here. And the Defense Department said, no, we're keeping our troops there to protect against the rise of ISIS again. That's the reason. So they don't even know what the policy is here. And on the other hand, you know, there's a Wall Street Journal piece out that people are talking about today about, you know, all this talk about Iran, this great Iran threat. Everyone's building it up. The administration's building it up. But it turns out, actually, we're removing military assets. We're pulling our carrier groups out of the Persian Gulf. We're closing the Basra consulate, doing all sorts of things to pull back, which actually we're in favor of. We think it's a good idea, but it doesn't coincide with what we're being told are the threats. So what's going on here?
Well, and then the Russians are sending missiles in. The S-300s are being moved in there. That's another thing that they held back on to appease Israel. You know, they didn't want us to do that, but they're moving those in, which means that they are determined. The one thing is we're pretty sure the U.S. government won't move out, but we can be darn sure the Russians aren't going to move out either, and they're not going to be beaten over there no matter what, no matter how powerful our side might be. That's not going to happen. There's going to be a lot of suffering if it comes. But, you know, it's sort of strange that, you know, with all these antagonism building up and weapons being built up and threats of sanctions and blockades, you know, it's almost weird that I always figure, well, maybe Putin will come up with some type of a suggestion that might make sense. He's capable of doing that.
Well, he comes under fire from his own people, because he's always seemed to be backing down. They backed down on Idlib. They backed down for a long time on the S-300s, and it's almost impossible for them to do it now. But, you know, here's another thing from Zinke, which ties in with what we're saying here. Here's what he said to this group. He said, Russia is a one-trick pony. I believe the reason they're in the Middle East is they just want to broker energy, just like they do in Eastern Europe. It's really funny. He's presenting that as if it's something bad. The Russians have a bunch of oil. They want to sell it to Eastern Europe. They want to sell it to the Europeans. Wherever they want to sell it, he's acting as if somehow them engaging in commerce is a threat to us, is a bad thing, whereas we should be encouraging the engaging in commerce.
Of course, that is the answer. Get people dependent. And that's why the Europeans are in a bit of a dilemma, because, and it was one of the arguments I always used, that this is less likely to be confrontational when NATO started moving further east and closer to the Russian borders. I said, they can't mess it up. The Europeans have become too dependent. But then again, the Europeans have to, they don't ignore us, you know, because we're very powerful and we provide the weapons and their defense. And so there may be a big realignment, because I think the Europeans are a little bit frustrated, especially because sanctions come along. We go in on an agreement. You know, the nuclear deal with the Iranians, we sign on, then we walk away from it, which means they were hurt more than us. They were benefiting from this. The world was benefiting from that agreement. But we walk away, and that's an economic penalty to the Europeans. So they have to be a bit frustrated with our policies.
Yeah, I don't know if you probably noticed this while you were on the road, Dr. Paul, but Netanyahu was before the UN. He was making a big to-do, and he loves to bring these props and these things. So he brought this prop, this picture of this building. Google this place. Google this place. This is where the Iranians are building nuclear weapons. It turns out it's a carpet cleaning factory. A bunch of people that lived there, they went and they took their picture out front because they thought it was really funny. But I was going to ask you, we talked a little bit about this before, maybe we'll revisit it in a future program, but you mentioned the trade and the fact that the U.S. Is determined to say Iran can export no oil, zero. Have you been following at all this, the Europeans putting together some kind of way of clearing trade?
Yeah, and I don't understand the details, but I think they're quite capable of doing. Why can't they figure out a way to get around the international payment systems? Because evidently we have major control of that, essentially, and if you don't get into it, it makes it very difficult to trade. But with the technology available, and if two countries started making a deal, we're going to send you so much oil and you're going to send us some euros, I don't know why that's so impossible with the technology available. But this was an announcement that they're working on something else. Just remember how many dictators lost their lives and their control of their countries because they wanted to move away from the dollar.
Yeah.
But this is my prediction on the long run. They're going to move away from the dollar because people are going to get frustrated and angry at us. And besides, the dollar eventually will not be sustainable because you can't run up trillions and trillions of dollars of more debt. So people will gradually give up on the dollar. Then there will be an alternative system. The question is, what will it be like? I don't know the details of what they're talking about, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's workable. Maybe not in a day or two, but I think what is workable is a much more simpler trade. You know, trade oil for euros. Yeah. You know, and get to be Europeans want the oil, and the Iranians would take it. But our position is that anybody who trades with Iran will be punished. Well, that includes Russia, doesn't it?
And China.
And China.
India.
And the Europeans.
Yeah.
So they have to be unenforceable threats that they can't export 1 gallon of oil. You know, that's not going to happen. There'll be a lot of violence before that occurs.
And they call us the isolationists.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing you touched on it earlier, and I think it's important because President Trump, he was even at the UN bragging about how what he's done for the economy and things are great for America because of him. But he is riding on this economy thing. But as you pointed out earlier, his moves to appease the neocons on Iran are going to have already made oil more expensive, and they'll continue to do so. Don't you think he's going to have a tough time balancing, hey, I made the economy great again, and hey, I got to make oil expensive again?
Yeah, I think in a few months we'll know just how good those agreements are. But, you know, this administration has indicated that they're not super excited about NATO. Get out of NATO, quit supporting. But there was a lot of wheeling and dealing there. Pay the bills and this sort of thing. But they've been critical. The administration has been critical of NATO. But now they want to start something called the Middle East Strategic Alliance, which is a NATO for the Middle East. And it's the various Arab nations. Obviously, they will be Sunni Arabs. And it is designed to show a unified force against guess who?
against
the Iranians. And you know, NATO used to be against the Soviets. Now it's just against Russia. They have too much free enterprise there, and they want to make profits selling oil. So we have NATO there aggravating things. But this will be just another effort to protect the military-industrial complex on our side of the ocean. And they must be intimidated by free markets. I imagine these people are capable of making money in a free market, but they're just terrified by this, that we have to have absolute control of this. And whether it's the military control, the financial controls, or control through force of arms and you know, blockades and sanctions. But it's something I think long-term, it's going to aggravate so many allies, pseudo-allies, close allies, and enemies to position themselves in unison, probably against us. You know, maybe not a one organization, but there's going to be a lot of people pretty annoyed with us assuming that we are the dictators and we have to spread our... And we do it in the name of such a hypocritical... We need to spread American goodness, you know. You do as we tell you, and then that is our goodness.
Yeah, well, if I were the Iranians, I wouldn't worry that much about a Saudi-led NATO. They've been bombing the poorest country on earth practically for 3 years, and all they seem to be able to do is blow up a bunch of kids on a school bus. So good luck to that. I would just close by saying glad to have Dr. Paul back. It's a little easier on me, and I'm sure it's a lot more interesting to our viewers. But I would like to also ask our viewers to subscribe to the Liberty Report on YouTube and also go to the Ron Paul Institute, ronpaulinstitute.org. Hit subscribe. We do updates. I had a couple of breaking news updates that I've done over the past couple of weeks that people seem to like. We try to get news out in a breaking way. We obviously, your privacy is secure with us, but please sign up for updates. They don't come as often as from some people. It's not going to bombard you, but we do like to keep in touch that way. Who knows, Dr. Paul, when they might cut us off.
Right. Now, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. I want to just close with a mention about sanctions and blockades. And I've always argued that sanctions are an act of war. Blockades certainly are. But if a war breaks out, that's the first thing a country does. They blockade the enemy. They keep products from going in. But it works the other way, too. If you put the blockade on first or put on sanctions, it will lead to war because it's a violation of that country's sovereignty. And I think that's what we're toying with. Although we have talked about and we throw our weight around with sanctions, it doesn't build good relations. It interferes with the market. And now we're talking about blockades, using the military to make sure, in this instance, to make sure the Europeans can't be benefited by buying oil and gas from Russia. We're insisting that they buy it from the United States. The United States is a little bit further from Europe than Russia, so it doesn't make any economic sense. So the violation of the economic policy is just another strategic error on our part, and this whole thing of threatening blockades should not go unnoticed. There's been a lot of political stuff in the news here in the last couple of weeks, but believe me, there's been very little talk about the serious strategy going on in Europe and how we participate in a situation around the world which is not exactly good for our national security. So we would stick to our message that pay attention to our foreign policy and look carefully at non-interventionism, because we believe very sincerely that a policy of non-interventionism is the way to go to seek peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Come back soon.